waiting for the moment when I'd be launched into emptiness. What devilish cruelty had devised this lingering horror, and what subterranean dungeon offered less hope of escape or could provide a more awful tomb? I daren't even struggle for fear of jolting loose the pin, sobbing feebly as I swung slowly to and fro, a helpless human pendulum. Oh, merciful God! Was it possible the ghastly moment of release would never come, and I'd be left to hang until I starved, or perished of freezing cold, or did go mad at the last? Do you know what saved me from gibbering lunacy? The anguish of cold and the bite of steel bars into my flesh may have helped, but I believe it was pure funk that made me lose consciousness, sinking into an oblivion in which pain and fear and misery and hopelessness merged into a kind of trance in which they ceased to have meaning. Or perhaps, as confounded Dick Burton suggested when I described my ordeal to him, I simply fell asleep. That, he opined, would have been the thing to do. Damned idiot had no imagination whatsoever. Trance, coma, sleep or delirium, it lasted for hours. For when I came to, in agony from the constriction of my bonds and the bite of the bars into my almost paralysed limbs, the wind had dropped, and the cold somewhat abated. If it hadn't, I'd have been dead. There was sunlight bathing the cliff, I remember. And then I must have swooned again, for when I regained consciousness for the second time, the sun had gone, and it was early evening, although I had no notion of this at the time. Now, I've described as best I can what it's like to be hung over the edge of the world, spider-fashion, at the end of a thread, except that he can climb up and you can't. But when all's said and done, even the most hellish ordeal ends, in death or survival. Mine finished with a distant clank, which meant nothing to me. I heard it, but didn't understand it, or what was happening as I was drawn slowly upward through the trap and into the dungeon again. Other things I remember, the crash of the trap closing, the steel frame being opened and strong hands lowering me onto a soft bed, my limbs being chafed and rubbed with warm oil, the sting of Tej in my mouth and throat, voices in Amharic, and then, through a lamplit haze, Ulaba Walk looking down at me, the handsome face tense with concern, the fine eyes troubled, and that, I can tell you, was a happy sight to waken to. She was kneeling by the mattress on which I lay, still in that beastly dungeon, but with the trap safely closed. Above her stood a tall, fine-looking fellow of about my age, dressed in princely fashion, with not only a red fringe charmer and knight's gauntlets, but a silver coronet in his braided hair, with little horns and metal tails trailing to his shoulders. I must have been still fairly lost, for all I remember after that is being covered with a blanket and soft, heavy lips kissing my brow, and then drifting into sleep, undisturbed by visions of bottomless chasms. It's a great advantage of cowardice that escape from peril elates you beyond terrified reaction. That comes later when you think back, and is best treated by liberal applications of booze. I didn't stir for above 12 hours, and woke to find myself in the same spot, aching damnably in every joint, with wheels on my torso from the pressure of those damn steel strips, but in my right mind, full of beans, ready for grub, and for Ulaba Walk. She came as I was contemplating a loving squeeze at either of the barely clad damsels who were massaging my tired limbs, or the third who was removing the remnants of my breakfast. Fortunately, perhaps, contemplation was as far as I got, for she came briskly in, sent the wenches scampering with a sharp word, looked at me carefully, took my face in her hands, and kissed me in excellent style, but withdrew when I became familiar, and seated herself at the foot of my mattress. My breakfast lass had left a flask of Tej, and Ulaba filled 2 cups. "Listen," says she. So I did, and was treated to a tale fit for the wildest of penny dreadfuls, but true, as the wildest tales often are, in my experience. As I guessed, Mali, whose eccentric behaviour we'll discuss presently, had been the traitress within the gates, somehow getting word out to Yando, who'd been on the lurk nearby, and unbarring the gate for him and his gang in the small hours. They'd overrun the garrison of Bints and Dodderers without difficulty, and Yando, whose style I couldn't but admire, had offered Ulibar a stark choice. Give Yando his jollies, or it would be the